The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show sponsored by AIB. Lads, I'm right in the middle of championship form. Championship mood here now, lads. Sunny days. Okay, there were kind of disappointing games because Donegal and Meath didn't really show up. They were the two big games that we're going to concentrate on. But at the same time, there's definitely championship fever here now. Tyrone have stepped up to the mark. Kildare are next new kids on the block. Galway are new kids on the block. And we have a championship here, lads. We really have a championship unfolding before our very eyes.
Yeah, we're after seeing some quality performances from teams that there was, I suppose, expectations of them improving into this season, and then disappointing performances from, you know, Donegal and Meath, who people were expecting to improve into the year. So it definitely sets up the championship nicely because, look, a young team like Donegal, a team like Meath in their first year of a new manager, they will attack the qualifiers with a bit of gusto as well. So it's not like you're looking at a Tyrone who are long on the road being knocked into the qualifiers and not having the stomach for it. Look, it sets it up for a hell of a good summer, yeah?
It does, definitely.
And the weather definitely helps.
God help them. I want to talk about the weather in a minute because I have a really good story of playing in Chicago. And look, it's a decent story. I'll tell you in a minute. Anyway. We want to get through. It doesn't paint me in a good light. So you really enjoy it, the two of you. Round 2A of the qualifier draw was this morning. Meath versus Sligo, lovely one to get back in the mix for Keane, but that's if Sligo even are in that, because Sligo used 7 subs according to reports this morning. So, you know, there was a precedent last year with Laois and Armagh, and Armagh could have taken the game off Laois, but they gave them a replay because Laois beat them, and it would have been, you know, a weird one to knock Laois out when you were beaten on the field of play. Then Laois beat them in the replay. So Antrim could, by the letter of the law, if Sligo were guilty, now, because there was talk I was reading that Mark Breheny went off after taking a heavy hit. So if he actually turns out that he was a blood sub, maybe our Sligo are okay, but that's still a little bit up in the air. So there could be a replay of that game next week. Our Antrim could kick Sligo out if they wanted to be like that.
Well, that's the thing. Is it a case that Antrim have to put in an objection, or do the GAA take control of this, I wonder?
I think it's Antrim.
Isn't that
just ridiculous? Like, I mean, surely to God, like, the GAA should be the ones that make this decision, and not, because no matter what way, if Antrim don't appeal, their supporters and their players will be fairly frustrated. If they do appeal, it's kind of saying, which you were beaten anyway, take your beating. You know, it's a no-win situation.
I think a replay is a fair one of it. If Sligo broke the rules, but Sligo beat Antrim convincingly enough on the field of play, then a replay is probably the fairest thing, and everybody would agree. You know, with Laois and Armagh last year, everybody seemed happy with the replay, you know, and because Laois thought they'd be out, but Laois won the game. You know, so it's kind of like, okay, let's just replay it all together.
I don't think Meath will be bothered either way.
No. Meath need this.
Does it put the game back a week? No, I suppose.
It will put it back, yeah. The replay will be next week. That's what happened.
Okay,
so they'll play along with the two B teams the following week. So we've different groups of 4 qualifiers every week now, which really cranks up the interest. But anyways, I want to move on from that and give out about the coverage yesterday on RTE. And I don't think I can blame RTE because they're taking the feed off BBC. Lads, I'm telling you, you have to go to these matches. Thank God you were at this, Conan, because you had a bird's eye view of things were going on. Like, we missed a full score in this game. Like, I mean, there was a whole new dynamic yesterday of teams pushing up, the kickouts. The kickouts were so important. We know, we're going to talk about that in some of the analysis section, how important the kickouts were. And we were missing nearly every single one. BBC were showing replays. RT didn't even have their own cameras there, but from what I have, because Jerome Quinn told me on Twitter, he says, to be accurate, RT take the feed from BBC, and it's the BBC's use and selection of shots that you're taking issues with. Now, I wasn't criticising RT, I just went, the replays are ruining this game, I said on Twitter. Whatever we're missing kickouts. Mark Bradley scored a point in the first half, and we missed the whole move leading up to the point.
The best move of the game, in my opinion. Like, Peter Hart comes down to the left wing, gets it onto that left foot. He sees Mark Bradley making a run in the other direction with the outside of the boot. He hits a diagonal ball, but it's not your normal diagonal ball. It actually curls around the corner and sets Mark Bradley away over the top. It was crazy stuff what he did. Mark Bradley runs onto the ball. The defender scrambling. Bradley cuts back and puts it over. It was just like a wand, like with the way he sent that ball, like around his corner and over the top. And I actually came back last night and wanted to watch this movie again, and there was nothing. It wasn't on the replay. It wasn't on the live show. It wasn't on the highlight show. Missed the best moment of the game. Straight after Michael Murphy's big score, then Peter Hurt does that. Two giants going at it, and you're like, yeah, this is football.
Yeah, it's not good enough. It's not good enough that you're missing big chunks of the game. And kickouts, goalkeepers now have a second ball there. They're sprinting out to that 21-yard line. That ball's going out.
Particularly McGinley, he's sprinting out off the line. Look, sure, it can't be that bloody complicated for them to do a split screen anyway. I mean, that's
split screen's one thing, but do you need the replay that badly? Like, I'd prefer to see the game unfold than see the replay. Like, I mean, there's breaks in play that you can go back to these things, and there's always time in a match to go back to these things.
Yeah, well, it was interesting on the Sunday game. You saw the time the ball was in play for the Meath-Kildare game, and sure, it's, you know, the ball is in play maybe only 40 minutes of the 70, so there's ample opportunity for replays. Yeah, you're right. They shouldn't be. Hindering our view at home on our couches.
No, definitely not. No, I was incredibly frustrated watching it, because especially can't get to the game because it was down.
There's
at
nothing
wedding.
Worse than crowd shots, is there? They drive me up.
Yeah,
the wall.
There's no need for that.
Lingering
either.
30-second crowd shots when the game is ongoing. You're roaring at the telly. Yeah. Will you get back to the match? Like, why are we looking at this?
Possession stats are worse than crowd shots. In
outside of the, do you remember the director for the World Cup, where they just pick a beautiful blonde girl in the crowd? Those crowd shots weren't the worst.
Well, they're all right. Unfortunately, we haven't seen too many of them so far.
No. It's hard to find good-looking GA.
I said people,
Keane. I'm including both sexes in that one. Right, Mark Bradley's black card and sending off from the black card, right? It was a black card. The umpire saw it. And it's one of these tricks. We've all done it, lads. You grab your man, you pull him back, and you get out in front of him. And sometimes, very rarely, you'll get away with this in the full forward line, but you can get away with this out around the field. It goes on all the time. But it was a black card. Nobody seemed to disagree it was a black card. What I couldn't understand is that the point stood. Now, it makes no sense that you can foul your man and kick a point. The point stands, but you get sent off. Yes. Like, I mean, think about what's after happening here. It was bizarre.
Well,
stuff.
Yeah, I found that very strange as well at the time when you were watching. I was kind of saying, well, hold on a minute here. He's given him a black card. He obviously has done something wrong here. The infringement was obviously before he took possession and kicked it over the bar, because you could see McGee lying on the ground. So very strange as to why that wasn't... why that score wasn't cancelled off and a free out given. But look, we just put that down. That was... one mistake, maybe.
Yeah, maybe that's just a little, kind of grey area with the black card that this isn't allowed for. Because if you foul your man, that's kind of...
Well, like, it's the same as anything else. I mean, the referee called the umpire called the referee's attention to it. But the infringement took place before he took possession, so he gained the advantage.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, if that happened near the end of a game and you got a goal and you won the match, wouldn't you be delighted at your black card? You'd be walking off a big celebration. it'd be better than a substitution.
Yeah, like, you could actually just rugby tackle your man to the ground, gather the ball and in the back of the net.
Yeah, lucky it wasn't a close match. Like, it's an odd example of the punishment.
Imagine it happened in a club game where the referee might end up.
My God, he'd be like the Cartage Buckley in the boot of the car down in Ockram years ago. But I wanted to talk, lads, because the lads playing a game like that, Conan, I don't know, like, I know up the north wasn't as hot as it was down south. I drove up from Kerry and the heat was unbearable. So the Waterford Cork lads, how they put it on, we talk about that in the hurling show. But even the Donegal Tyrone game, lads, playing in that heat, oh my God, it's like, how did it do it? Like, Donegal looked like they were playing in that heat, and Tyrone looked like they were playing in a totally different climate. Whether that's fair enough, but it reminded me of playing in Chicago, lads, right? Went out in Chicago in 1998. I dropped off the leash panel anyways, right? And there was a bloody heat wave out there the first weekend. It was over 100 degrees. So I went out into the field and I could hardly gasp your breath walking out into the field, like, you know, with the heat just hitting you. And it was my first game with the club, and it was this thing you do with the wing backs where you go, oh, which side do you want? Oh, you know, and you're being all polite with each other because you don't know each other that well. So I looked around at the two wing forwards, right? One was Lee O'Brien that used to play with Wexford. Remember him, Keane? Yeah. He would be our era. But he was more of a wing back, and I was thinking, right, he's intercounty experience. I glanced over to the other wing, and it was this kind of elderly man, right? Graying. Little kind of a slip of a fella, skinnier than me. So I says to your man here, I'll take this fella over here, grand. So I was just taking the good hit, no problem. he'd scored 3 points from play off me in the first 10 minutes. Couldn't stay with this old fella at all. It transpired he was Gary Mason that won all Ireland with Down, right? So it was like, how is this after happening to me? Because I was embarrassed, because I would have been like, you know, a big signing or whatever. So I started trash talking him anyways, and I started telling him he was washed up and what's he doing out in America and his career's over. And I don't know what I was talking about, because he was cleaning me out of it.
And because you were out in America as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, in my head I wasn't washed up, I was just kind of young. But he turned around and gave me a punch in the stomach, and I'll never ever forget it. I thought I was going to die. He just did it so quickly and then jogged off as I crumbled down to the ground. So my experience of playing in the heat, don't always pick the old man. That's the only advice I can give you, lads. But I don't know, Keane, I don't know what heat you've ever played in or Conan, but it's like, it is really, really, like, I don't know how they did it yesterday. You have to give them a lot of respect to put on, especially Tyrone, put on that performance.
Absolutely, Well, sometimes you can go out on a day like that and you can be totally dead. Like, it's, you just can't catch your breath.
Yeah. And your legs don't work.
Yeah, your energy levels are just completely sapped. For whatever reason, even from the moment you get out for the warm-up. I remember we played Wexford in Dr. Cullen Park, and it was just phenomenal, the heat. It was actually, unfortunately, the day we were kicking the tire out of them and ended up losing the game. But it was just an incredibly hot day. And even in your warm-up and everything like that, like, it's interesting that there's been, you know, some comments about maybe the Meath warm-up before the Kildare game, that, you know, Meath were doing it, were out there for a reasonable amount of time. And you just think, on days like that, you genuinely don't even need
no,
a warm-up.
You just need to stretch.
You just need to do a little bit of a stretch, get loose, and then get out and play the game. And it's incredible credit due to the conditioning of all the teams that played this weekend, because it was a very, very tough weekend to play, particularly with the intensity that these games are played at.
Yeah, definitely. And you definitely make a good point with the warm up. Like, I mean, I would, you know, like before training sessions where you just go out and kick a few scores. I honestly think this won't look good. You know, the optics of this, oh, they're only thrown together. But like, if you do one or two runs and limber up, your body's hot. You just need to stretch and kick scores. You don't need these elaborate warm ups. Like, I really strongly believe that.
I hate warm ups. Been involved in them, I've taken them myself, but like, I've never been a big fan of them. Like, I think every player knows what he needs to do to get ready for a game. For me, warm-ups is just an excuse for a manager to show the crowd that's there early, look how well drilled I have this team. And, you know, I've been involved in some of them where it's like, you're going 100 miles an hour and he's roaring and shouting at you. It's a full-on training session just for one last sort of chance to say, look, I've got these boys whipped into great shape. And it's fucking, pisses you off, like.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. And too much talk goes into warm-ups. Well, but like, genuinely, on a hot day like that, you make a great point. Forget about it. Just don't take the energy out of the lad. Like, the energy is absolutely vital on a day like that.
Yeah, it is. Well, I can remember we played a couple of games in Croke Park under where it was very, very warm days. And, you know, there's a warm-up zone in Croke Park, obviously. And, look, we did feck all in there. You know, very, very light bit of stretching. We went out on the field and everything was cut back. We actually limited our time out in the field. We kind of halved what, you know, if you're usually out on the pitch for maybe 20 minutes or 15, whatever it is, we halved the time out on the pitch and did it that. And that was Colin Brady was involved with us that time. And it definitely made a difference. You know, it hugely made a difference in the game. We were a lot sharper. And you just felt, you actually had an extra little bit of confidence because you were kind of thinking in your head, geez, you know, going into these days, God, this is going to be a tough day out here. You know, it's very warm. It's going to take the energy. It's going to take huge energy reserves to get through. You're trying to, you know, manage your efforts, you know, so that you get to the start of the game primed and full of energy. And in fairness, Colm did that for us really, really well.
Yeah, and I just give, for anybody listening who hasn't been in the warm-up areas, because loads of you won't have been in the warm-up areas because you weren't as good as me and Keane. Conan, you were being one of them.
I can imagine.
The warm-up areas in Croke Park are right, there's a door leading from the dressing room into the little warm-up area. It's AstroTurf. There's nets on the ceiling, so you can go in and you can drive a ball up into the nets, do you know what I mean, and limber up. So lads stand around there stretching. You see some pictures on Twitter with the Dublin lads and stuff. Mm. They'll take pictures of Sam Maguire. That's the warm up. They're not very big.
No, like, they're
actually
quite
useless, and you run around in a little circle when you're nearly getting dizzy. And like, I'd say if they were building the stadium again, that they would be maybe double the size they are.
Oh, they'd have to be double the size.
I'm glad I never had experience that. Sounds awful.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Right, lads, we'll have to leave it there because one of the stars for Tyrone yesterday, Matty Donnelly, is on the line. Matty, we're just talking about how difficult it must have been playing in that heat.
Yeah, but look, it was perfect conditions. It's kind of what you could describe as perfect in that you have a dry ball, you have a dry ground, great surface, no real wind, and the sun was out, so you can't complain. And if you can, then there's something wrong.
At least G had the cover of some cloud. Down with Waterford and Tipperary, Waterford and Cork, they had 26 degrees with sun, so you had some relief from that heat.
We had a bit of relief, but there's a few of the ginger lads in the squad. Mickey O'Neill has got a bit of a touch, so somebody didn't get away that late.
Come here, did you have to do much talk about the conditions? Because, like, I mean, I'm sure the likes of Peter Hart or, you know, these lads, would there be factor 30 being passed around in the dressing room before the match, or would you put much thought into stuff like that?
It doesn't be discussed with the team, but I'm sure them boys are a bit aware of it now, and they'll obviously be slagging and that going about. I don't know how they prepare, but I think Mick O'Neill got the worst touch now. He mustn't bring the sun cream.
Come here, listen, is there a new policy for Tyrone to shoot on site, or is it just a one-off game that everything just clicked for you?
Some of the scores yesterday were very good. It is something that obviously every team works on, is their finishing and scoring and backing yourself when you get a chance to take a shot. And I think that's the key, really, backing yourself and shooting a bit of conviction. But yesterday they seemed to all go over. Another day, you know, it's been well documented in the past that might have been their feeling, that a lot of them chances wouldn't have been converted. I know yesterday, even personally, my conversion rate wasn't as high as I would like it to have been. So while it can on the scoreboard, it might look pretty, there's still some shots that we would like to maybe clean up.
Yeah, you're putting your point efforts well up in the air. Is this a new style? I don't think it was unusual for you that they're going way up in the air before they go to drop over.
I'm kind of the first one yesterday kind of hung up more than I'd planned, but I was probably my first shot, and I just thought I was really going to go for it and put the foot through it. Now the other ones maybe didn't go exactly where I wanted, but I think we put a lot of emphasis on putting the ball dead, and really if you are going to have a shot, go for it, and maybe that was the case in them situations. But usually I would like to have a bit more control on them.
Yeah, come here, for that first point when you got the ball, like, I mean, there didn't look like there was much on. You know, Donegal had a few lads across the 45. Did you see Owen McHugh, who would be a good bit smaller than you, in that situation and go, I have a great chance to push past him here?
Not necessarily that I seen Owen McHugh. I just thought that I maybe had a bit of space
on the outside.
I didn't have much support over that side, and maybe they had condensed over two thirds of the pitch, so I just thought I'll attack it here and drive the leg, see where it takes me, and once I got a split second, I just threw the boot on it.
Yeah, and it actually went over. How are you settled into midfield now, Maddie? Because you're there a few years now. You seem to have worked out exactly how to play that position that suits your game. You know, you don't waste energy going forward for no reason. You pick your moments to go forward, but you're covering midfield and you're doing your defensive duties as well.
Yeah, well, really, primarily, my job and most of the players' job is the role we have on the team off the ball. So, and then you probably, in this day and age, you've free scope to call it as you see it when you're going forward. And when you're probably back behind the play, you can read it a lot better and see, you know, different spaces or different gaps opening up ahead of you. So I wouldn't say I've got it figured out yet, but again, you do have to, because the game is so fast and so pacey at the minute, you do probably have to pick your times. You know, you don't want to be going 100% up the pitch all the time and maybe getting caught in the back foot.
Yeah, did it take you long to figure out? I know you say you don't have it perfectly worked out. I think you have it pretty close. But it take you a while through trial and error of working out what works for you and what doesn't? Because you were a very versatile player, you know, but you seem to have nailed down this position now.
Well, probably I was a middle eight player for a while, and then obviously I'd been in and out from the inside lane. But I find all the middle eight positions are very similar. And
yeah, true.
Probably, I wouldn't say it was particular trial and error in that one position. It was more just learning as you go along and the experience of playing out around the middle eight and playing football, that you just seen the game a different way the more experience you got. I think that's the same with any player. I don't think it was just me saying this specific position requires this at certain times, and it's more so just experience going along.
Conan here on the show was at the game yesterday. I was only watching on television, and he reckons that you have only five players that actually have set positions: goalkeeper, two American fullbacks, Mark Bradley up front, and you had Hamsey Mark and Michael Murphy. The rest of you 10 are all interchangeable and are all doing, you know, similar jobs and having different opportunities to burst forward.
I don't know how accurate
that is.
No, it's good. I suppose it's good. It's good that people think that, and that players aren't interchangeable, because I think you do need that. You really don't want to depend on certain players in certain positions. So the fact that it is interchangeable and fluid is a good thing, and something we're encouraged to do. And when you play that are comfortable with being interchangeable and adding that fluid play around the middle, then that can only be a good thing.
Talk to us about Niall Morgan's kickouts, because he went long an awful lot. Mickey Hart after the game denied that it had anything to do with the mark, but it must have something to do with it, because it's definitely a new tactic for Tyrone this year.
It's nothing we've really talked about is the mark, but obviously when teams push up in your kick out, you kind of have to go long without putting too much pressure on your defence. So it's good. Look, we've seen like Colin was performing well with long ball yesterday, so it's good when that happens. All it is, you might have fellas out there in the middle who will be putting you under pressure when you go long, but yesterday it seemed to work, and Colin and Colin and the fellas out in the middle performed well there. So I'd say ask more so why we kind of went long a lot more yesterday.
Yeah, and it's given you that confidence, because what came off those long balls were goal chances, which you've been accused of not being able to create. You know, you've got running straight through on a defence after driving it as far as you can from the kickouts.
Yeah, no, it is a great relief, and the game's simple when it's played like that, and when it comes off like that, and being able to drive the ball, you know. I suppose the defenders maybe love seeing it when the ball's been driven 80 yards up the field and you're winning primary possession.
Yeah.
But it gives other teams probably that something to think about, that if they do push up, that, you know, they could be punished, or it's just a risk, and it's the call of the team. If they do push up and go long, then, you know, you're leaving yourself open. But it's just the risk that all teams decide to take when they push up and kick out.
Yeah, no, it is. It's definitely added a real attacking dynamic to the game, that when they push up, you can go along and cut a lot of their defenders out. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. Come here, I was looking back at your career, Matty, and you won an All-Ireland Minor in 2008. You were kind of in and off the panel then, and you kind of being taken off before half-time against Kerry in Killarney. That's probably that qualifier game as a turning point in your career.
Yeah, in 2012, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a turning point. It happened a few times that year, probably. It was taken off half before half-time or at half-time, maybe two or three times that year. So, and then actually it happened again in the National League in 2013. I was taken off at half-time against Kildare as well. So it was kind of just at that stage where I kind of had a decision to make whether I was going to, you know, go for it or maybe just keep floating about and stay in the position I was in. So I probably will. It's not nice getting taken off at half time, any player, but at the time you just had to see why, and be honest, the way you may have been taken off at that stage, and it was happening regularly. So I look, it was probably harsh lessons for myself, but I'd like to think I learned from them.
Yeah, and I saw you actually put down that you were maybe enjoying yourself a bit too much in Jordanstown when you're in college or something, or maybe the dedication wasn't what it should have been, or you were playing wing forward back then, right?
Yeah, well, maybe not maybe that lifestyle had maybe started to peter out by 2012, but maybe the damage done in the years before that with the previous guest of yours, Kieran Hughes, maybe the years previous to that probably delayed my development in the county player, and maybe could have been on the scene quicker if I had applied myself right in them years. But again, all lessons learned.
Well, that's the thing, Matty, but there's lessons learned. But, like, I mean, you can't be a model player from the 18 up until you're 32. And, like, you have to go to college and enjoy yourself as well and then go, right, that's done. Now I want to be serious about my football. Like, everybody can't be this perfect model player from a young age.
Yeah, no, and to be honest, I've spoke this about with a few of the boys here in the same boat, you know, from different counties and that. And they don't regret it. Like, it was great crack at the time. Probably something you had to do. I've seen something similar. Rio Ferdinand went through it as well, where he maybe thought he wasted a year or two from living that lifestyle. But again, he says it was for the benefit in the long run too.
Yeah, and you had to focus a lot on getting bigger because you were a slip of a fella, and you've transformed yourself into a pretty dominating presence. Is that for football or is it for the beach?
No, it's all for football. I was only a wee slip of a lad back then, and I seen in the first year or two when I was in around the squad in 2010 and that, you know, we were in the dressing room beside, you know, Kevin Hughes and Philip Jordan, Owen Mulligan, them fellas, and and Conor Gormley, and you would be absolutely no use to them in any sort of physical contest. So, and they were the fellas that were actually playing at that level. So I just thought it was something I needed to address. And the way the game was going, I seen the Dublin team that was kind of coming on the scene and the Cork team that was on the scene right then. And I just thought if you were to make any impression, you really had to be, you had to have a physical presence about yourself. So yeah, I probably spotted that early enough, thank God, and put in a lot of work then before it was ready to make an impression.
Yeah, and do you think just you obviously are, but like I think Dublin are the standard bearers for physicality. Do you think Tyrone are at that level now in your progression? You know, you're 3 or 4 years with this new team on the road, that you're ready to take on that next step now?
Well, there's only probably one way you'll actually know, but we would be pretty confident in our fitness levels and physically. But a lot of, you know, you can do a lot of physical work and stuff too with Dublin as well, or on the road, and their players might be a bit more matured physically as well. So look, we would like to think we won't come undone because of fitness anyway, definitely. But it's like all the top teams and a lot of county teams now, they probably won't be beat because of fitness, because of the amount of work they put in physically. So we wouldn't be found wanting in that area, I don't think.
Yeah, it's a wide open championship. We were just saying earlier on in the show there, Matty, Dublin were beaten in the league final, you know, Kerry in the mix, Mayo have been beaten, Galway are a new team in the mix, Kildare are a new team in the mix, you know, year in the mix. Suddenly, instead of thinking there's a big three, there's almost like a big maybe six or seven now.
Well, you can say it's open and people can read a lot in the league and the opening rounds, but at the same time, until someone proves otherwise, it's still going to go down. You know, you're still talking about the likes of Dublin and Mayo and that. They proved year on year that they can recover from maybe blips in league form and early upsets in the championship. They'll still be there. The same teams will still be there near the end of the championship. But I do think there is more teams that are coming along and capable of putting in big performances, the likes of Galway and that, as you said.
Yeah, okay, maybe I'm getting losing the run of myself saying a big six or seven. There's definitely still the big three or four, and then but there could potentially be a big six or seven in a few years. Come here quickly before I let you go. Are you still boxing and doing the martial arts and stuff like that?
Hey, no, I haven't done a bit in a while now. It's more an off season hobby. But I got a few concussions and head injuries through the Gaelic, so I put me out of action of going to that in my spare time. But It's more of an off-season thing.
Right, okay, because I saw a picture of you with Geezer and John Kavanagh getting your arses handed to you, I think you were, the way you were describing it.
I was 2 years ago in Dublin. It's a humbling experience any time you do go in the match with the likes of the Geezer. It is humbling, to say the least.
Matty, thanks very much for taking the call.
No bother, will it? Good man.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens, yeah. and it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show doesn't look great, there was, maybe if they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible, and lucky to lose, like. Let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure,
50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name. AIB, backing club and county.
Conan, you had some really interesting analysis on Sports Joe this morning that I was reading, and you kind of detailed, because you were at the game, how Tyrone set up, and it was very interesting that they have two full backs that are detailed to man mark. They have Mark Bradley, who'll stay in the full forward line. They had Hamsey following Murphy, and then they had the goalkeeper, and then the 10 other players.
Yeah.
And the 10 other players just kind of moved up and back and up and back, and that's basically the reality of it. They'd only about five players in set positions, in positions that actually that's your job. The rest were just, you know, the middle third. They're in the middle third, they're working hard, they're defending and attacking, and that's how Tyrone are kind of new, that's their new formation.
Yeah, Mickey Hurt said afterwards maybe this was a glimpse of what is to come. Now, he didn't really elaborate on that, but watching the game, it was almost like they were playing football a couple of years ahead of everybody else, where it's going to be like this. Now, defensively, they did have set positions to fill, but those 10 players would fill them differently. Normally, they would try and get Colm Cavan in the edge of the square. But what happened then? Donegal were trying to sort of occupy Colm Cavan by pushing an extra man, and sometimes they had four men in the full forward line because Brennan and Carroll joined up with, I think it was McBurty, and Eamon Doherty was playing full forward for most of the game. But that was never allowed to happen. Colm Cavan was always free, because as soon as Tyrone lost the ball, you had Matty Donnelly dropping into right half back, you had Conal McCann coming centre half back, and Tiernan McCann went left half back, and they just sank deep. Usually Donnelly and McCann were following the two boys joining into the full forward line, so you still had Conal McCann and Colm Cavan completely free at the edge of the square. Then of course you had the other
then
six
the half
lads
forward line will start filtering.
You had
back.
Sludden, Hurt, all these boys coming back then as well, and it gave them that layers, like. But then as soon as they won the ball, then yep, it was everybody, let's go. And you could see it was so slick, and people were picking up different people at different times. Peter Hurt, I spoke to him afterwards, and he was talking about marking Neil McGee in the full forward line. Now, he was using that example as if Donegal were doing this too. Donegal are so fluid now, and we had to sort of adapt to that. But it just shows you that all the players were willing to sort of pick up these different jobs. They knew what the jobs had that had to be done, but then they were willing to adapt to those different jobs.
It is. It's about being honest in that middle third, and, you know, because I suppose you could easily lose yourself in there and not work.
Yeah.
But Tyrone are so honest that you know you're going to get that work, and you know you have the lads filtering back. And if Donegal are slow, you'll have the midfield dropping back, then you'll have the half forward line drop back, and then you'll even have Sean Kavanagh and whoever the corner forward was yesterday. Let me see here. Mulgrew or somebody like that will go back. So you're looking at when Tyrone get back into that system where they've only left Bradley up, you're snookered there. You're not getting through that. You know what I mean? There's just too many men back. They're too aggressive in the tackle. When Tyrone are at that level, you know, you're not just going to kick the ball away, but very, very rarely you're going to work a score through that.
Yeah, very rarely. And Donegal in the early stages of the game did it quite well. But you will see that a lot. Playing against these sort of defensive teams or these well-organised defensive units, that you can get a bit of joy early on in a game, but as maybe the added bit of energy goes out of the legs, and as the game wears on and the support runs aren't, you know, coming as quick or coming as regularly from your teammates, scoring opportunities tend to dry up. And Tyrone, you would have to say, are just, as well as having looked at, as you pointed, the right attitude and the honesty of work rate that, you know, that you maybe don't see in all teams. And it's a consistent thing with Tyrone that they have always had under Mickey Hart.
Yeah.
But their organisation, I think, is the thing that sets them apart from the other teams that all try and do this, in that they're very disciplined, but they all know where they need to be. Like, we've seen it so many times where teams are trying to play this defensive system and trying to get bodies back, but they don't actually cover any goods. You know, they're not covering the right zones of the pitch, and they follow a man and get dragged out of position. Like, that's the big thing with playing that sort of a zonal defence, is that there are certain guys on the opposing team that need to be tagged and need to be man-marked. But outside of those, maybe 3 to 4 players, probably maximum on any team, everyone else is filling the scoring zone. And Tyrone just defend that scoring zone. And they will probably look at it and say, OK, if you guys think you can kick 20 points from outside the scoring zone, well, then fair play to you. You're going to set a new record in terms of accuracy and efficiency, and you deserve to beat us if you do that. So they're just playing very much a percentages game.
Percentages, yeah. And we saw when Donegal played Dublin the year they ambushed them. Dublin started that game so fast and kicking long range scores.
Kicked
and
like this six, is Dublin, six brilliant points, yeah.
Unbelievable scores. You can't maintain that. Like, the stats, and that's what Jim McGuinness would have told Donegal, these are the stats of where points are kicked from. I want this area covered. So Tyrone know that, and you had diagrams on the website, Conan, exactly where they are. And it's scoring zone. It's scoring zone. If you want it outside,
it's perfect visual aid because sometimes it's hard to describe exactly what we're talking about. We're talking about organised and filling those positions.
Yeah.
But the diagram that Conan has is perfect. It shows you exactly that sort of the circle 30 yards out around the D, where the majority of scorers are, the danger zone, really. And look, what they want to do is prevent goals. Like, on several occasions, you'll see Colm Kavanagh standing back almost as a second goalkeeper at times.
Yeah, and sometimes I think he's wasted back behind there.
Yeah, but,
you know,
that's a sacrifice. Yeah, absolutely. Like, we would maybe have a slightly different philosophy on things. We would be thinking, look, why is he in there? He's wasting there. He should be out further, putting pressure on the ball and not just conceding the initiative to the game, you know, playing more on the front foot. But that's the way they have set up. It's how they've done it for a number of years. And they believe that if they keep the goals out and keep the score down, that they're going to win. And in fairness to them, look, we've spoken about it loads of times, they've put themselves well in the mix for the last couple of seasons, where they've just fallen narrowly short, and maybe they've found that level of improvement this year. Yesterday's performance was exceptionally good. Now, you look, they're not going to be probably as efficient or as good as that every day. Their long range shooting was superb yesterday.
Well, but it was almost like there was an instruction to go for those scores, because you don't always see Tyrone taking them on. They have to get into the perfect position to kick a score. And we even saw McCurry, and I can see now when McCurry's not getting on the team, like, he'd one great chance of turning and kicking, and that goes wide. And he sucked the life out of them against Mayo last year as well. They have a new breed now that are happy to shoot. And, like, I mean, I have never seen Tyrone going for shots off the outside of their boots on the run like that. Like, this was clearly, lads, it must have been an instruction, go for this, or else it was just a performance where it just, things all seemed to work. But, like, I mean,
maybe they just, like, these guys are still, a lot of them are kind of young players too. Maybe they're just developing that extra bit of confidence too. They've probably got confidence from some of their early league form as well. They're Ulster, you know, they're the top team, they're the top dog in Ulster now, and they were trying to lay a marker down. And sometimes when you go out with that mindset of, you know, rather than playing with that bit of fear that sometimes I would say Tyrone have had, you know, that sort of negativity in their game.
Conservative nature, yeah.
So they blew the shackles off a bit yesterday, and if that's a trend that they follow for the rest of the season, then they're going to be a hell of a hard team to beat.
Yeah, it was a tactical masterclass in the sense, right, this, lads, I was a huge defender of the mark. Anything that can preserve some traditional values in a game, I'm all for. You know, I'm a traditionalist, right? So Mickey Hart, I've no doubt he's against the mark. Mickey Hart hates change. Mickey Hart loves the mark now, I can guarantee you that, because we know the new phenomenon now is pushing up on kickouts. Teams try to do it as much as possible. They don't want to concede a tap to the corner back. That day is gone, thank God, because it was a blight on the game. So now, right, so teams are pushing up in the kickouts. What do we say on this show all the time? If a team's pushing up in the kickout, don't look for the short one. Don't get snookered. Everyone's pushing up. They're all intense now. We see Kerry doing in Dublin. Now, Cluxton might find a fella, but generally, goalkeepers, drive the bloody thing out. Niall Morgan's a monster kickout. Sean Kavanagh's goal chance, like, a whole lot of goal chances came off hitting that. I would take a 50-50 chance of winning that ball in midfield and having a clear sight on a Donegal goal that you're very rarely going to get a clear sight on. I would take a 50-50 chance, even not with the best fetch in midfield in the world, although Colm Kavanagh was unbelievable. I would take that chance. 80% of Morgan's kickouts went to midfield. Now, this is a clear shift. 100%. Kieran Whelan did great analysis, I thought, in the Sunday game last night, where he actually put a bit of bloody effort into, you know, he used the research team that RTE have no doubt have in a good way, and actually came up with the, where the kickouts went last year, kickouts went this year. The mark has a huge bearing on this. You saw the quick kickout to Sean Kavanagh, it was, I think it was for the first point from Mulgrew. He got one over the sideline. Now, if that mark wasn't there, Sean Kavanagh might have ran out over the sideline with the ball, because that's where his momentum was taking him, or he'd be shadowed out there. He got the mark, turn, bang, quick ball, bang, over the bar. The mark is what do, what did that, lads. It's the opportunity, Mickey Hart being the conservative manager he is, going, well, there might be a bit more benefit to me going out there now than there was last year. You can understand maybe why he didn't want to go out there last year.
Well, he was asked about the mark afterwards and he did not agree with what you were saying.
I don't know. Don't mind him. Do not mind him.
I don't think it was the marks that made the difference for us today. No. It's needs
don't
must.
Mind him. Listen,
don't
this is my game.
They push up on our kicks. They've been doing that for some time now. They push up. We can't get the short, quick getaway kick. Then you don't have much option really but to play it long.
So there you go. Okay, and that's fair enough. So at least he's going long because of the pushed up kick out. So that's half the tactics is right. If he won't admit, I don't think he's admitting it was the mark because he was vehemently against the mark. Right, I'm not going to admit I'm the one wrong here, but seriously, but the point stands. Go long to midfield. We saw it with Kildare and Meade that we're going to talk about as well. Going long to midfield, and while both games were one sided, they were incredibly enjoyable. It's what ruined the game, lads, is the tap to the corner back while the other team runs the opposite direction, and then the slow build up play, and there's no chance of ever breaking inside the defensive wall.
Yeah, well, I think the two best goal scoring opportunities, actually, despite the fact that there were two goals scored in the game, the two best goal scoring opportunities were Sean Kavanagh's in the first half and
Owen McHugh's
in the first half, and both of those came from a long kick out from their own goalkeeper. One of them, I think Colm Kavanagh caught it in behind Michael Murphy, so all the Donegal defenders are half back and everybody's pushed right up the field. Morgan has a monster kick. I mean, he cleared it, was an absolute, like, it was a monster kick. It cleared everybody, went over the top. Kavanagh caught it over Murphy, flicked it through to Sean Kavanagh, who came through and should have had a goal. Almost, I can't remember if it was from the next kick out or not, but from the next kick out for Donegal, Tyrone again pushing everybody up the field not to concede the short kick out. Michael Murphy wins it, plays it through, and Donegal should have had a goal. So, I mean, I wonder if this is going to be. I love the mark as well, by the way. I think it's brilliant and it's encouraging more long range kicking, and it gives advantage to the midfield, and it leads to more end to end football with great pace, which is what we want to see. But I wonder, will it be the law of unintended consequences now, because teams will realise that actually we're at our most vulnerable defensively.
Yeah, I didn't. You know what? I was thinking that, but I don't want to say it.
I know. I don't.
I said this.
Pushing up on the kickouts is actually
pushing up on the kickout now is actually more dangerous than it's ever been, because if the opposition midfielder catches it, he can't be touched.
Yeah.
So you're already, not only are you conceding a catch in your own, in the middle of the field, or on your own, you know, 45, depending on where it's caught. You can't touch the man.
What I'm hoping on that one is that teams have all moved away from conceding it, because given good teams,
well, given good footballers the ball, you're not going to get it back.
Exactly, you know, and that grinds you down. It grinds you down over the course of 70 minutes, just letting them have easy, free possession.
Well, I think what you're going to have is, I mean, look at. It's I suppose to use the basketball as an example, you know, if you're watching basketball matches, you know, very rarely do you see the full court press, you know, when the opposition are starting an attack. It's always everybody drops back to the shooting zone. Now the shot clock obviously changes it completely from Gaelic football, but it's that philosophy of sometimes it's going to be right for teams to push up and sometimes it's going to be right to drop off, and I think that's where the really, really good teams and the teams that have quality players on the pitch and good leaders on the field will recognise in a game when to push on and when to drop deep. You know, if you're after going on a number of counter-attacks and lads' legs are dead, particularly with conditions the way they were with the weather and everything, sometimes you just have to say, let the old cornerback have it there. We'll all sit back, let them saunter up the field there. We'll get our defensive shape. We'll get our energy levels back. We'll soak this up. And then we'll hit them on the counter. And then maybe when the energy level is up, when the momentum of your team is high, when you, maybe after you get a goal or after you get a score, that maybe you try to really kill the opposition. So I think we're going to see a little bit more of a balance to it. You know the way we've had teams over the last number of years, and just for the whole game, they just concede kickouts. Just that's the plan is concede the kickout. And you're thinking, lads, you're losing by 6 or 7 points here, or you're losing by 3 points. You need to eventually push on and go at the game. So I think the tactical evolution with teams now, certainly the top teams anyway, is that they're going to be testing each other. They'll be throwing everything at each other, so you're going to have to be able to counteract the blanket defence, and you're going to have to be able to go man to man as well. So I think it's really, really interesting stuff.
It's really interesting tactic game. We saw Dublin against Carlow. I was at that game and they pushed up against Carlow. Now Carlow are a Division 4 team, to the level that they were leaving one man inside their own half nearly. Yeah. That's how much they were pushing up. Now, Mark O'Shea told us last year, because I questioned him about why Kerry didn't do it right throughout the game against Dublin, and Mark says, it's so hard to do it because you need a break in play.
Yeah.
You need a free. It needs to be after a free, then you can all move up. And we all know that now. But like, if I was Niall Morgan and we're playing against Dublin, we know Dublin like the full court press.
Oh, yeah,
I would be tying my laces.
Yeah.
I would be giving them every chance they want to get up into that push up, and then I'd be lamping it long. That's what exactly what I'd be doing. Or if someone would go down injured, give the team the ones to push up. Bait them into coming and pushing up, and then hit it long.
Yeah, and the interesting thing from Tyrone's kick out yesterday, it wasn't just the speed of which Morgan got the ball set. We always talk about keepers getting straight back out, but Colin Cavan, as soon as that ball was in the air or going wide or over, he was away out to the field, out to the wing. He was making himself available. It was almost like the two of them had a string attached to each other, and as soon as the ball was going over the bar, Colin Cavan was already in position, and he picked up a lot of handy uncontested ball as well, because Murphy wasn't ready for it, or whoever it was detailed in working with that specific instance. But Donegal went short a few times now because Michael Murphy was there picking up handy ball from at cornerback or whatever. Now Tyrone were happy enough to let him have it, and you could see, I think the Sunday game showed it last night, they were just all retreating back into their shell, and so they were happy enough for teams to go short, but they were also willing. When Michael Murphy came out, Colin Cavan was ready to dominate him, and I think he did overall. I just wonder what Cain was saying. Will Mickey Hart look at that Owen McHugh goal chance and wonder, do I really need Colin Cavan out there contesting that ball? Because if he doesn't win it, straight through on goal, Owen McHugh goes straight through with no body tackling.
But they could use somebody else back there. It doesn't have to be Cavan. If Cavan is able to fetch over Michael Murphy, I wouldn't be taking him.
I hear where Conan's coming from. Mickey Hart is a conservative.
Conan is very Mickey Hart's a conservative manager. Conan is the most conservative pundit you'll ever meet. He'll always imagine a doomsday scenario offensive.
But it's like the over analysis of Everton, you know. Like, I mean, if one incident in a game shouldn't be enough for you to sway you on the 70 minutes of action you've seen. And things happen, mistakes are made in a game. You could put that down to a mistake, because actually the Donegal chance, Colin Cavan actually got his two hands on the ball and actually dropped it, and that's the only reason Murphy even got the flick through to McHugh. So was it a systems failure, or was it just an individual error on that occasion?
Yeah,
could have been avoided though.
Exactly. But there's loads to talk about. We'll talk about Hampsey, his performance of Michael Murphy, and the scores he took in the performance of the weekend. But we want to move on to Kildare and Meath, because it's not going to make great analysis for you, Keane. But I want to concentrate on Kildare first, because they're a team going places, and we've said this. We've had Paddy Brophy on the show, we've had Niall Kelly on the show, we've had loads of these lads on the show, and we've talked about Kildare a lot, because they're definitely going places. They play brilliant football. We had Kevin Feely on the show as well. We've had more Kildare.
We haven't had Keane O'Neill yet.
But we've had three of the players on. Kevin Feely was outstanding. Now, they destroyed Meath's kickouts. Again, we saw kickouts to midfield, and even though Kildare were by far the better team, we saw a really entertaining game again. Let's see some fetching, lads. And if you're fetching in midfield, there's no one being able to be back into these defensive systems. Well, Meath and Kildare aren't massively defensive anyways, but Kildare won 11 of Meath's 21 restarts. You know, they were over 50% of theirs, and Feely was the man dominating. Like the young fella, Ronan Jones, God help him on Feely. Feely was just too good for him, and that was it. Menton and Moolick at least might break even on each other. But Kildare look really, really good. Daniel Flynn and Niall Kelly in the half forward line, holding the half forward. Then Brophy and McNally inside. Now, McNally scored more than Brophy, but Brophy's a nightmare to mark. He's always showing. To be that big and to be that lively, it's a very rare thing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, he is very lively, actually.
So lively.
His movement is pretty good, and he has an appetite for moving and for working there across the line, in fairness to him. Now, look at his. He left his shooting boots at home. On Saturday
and
evening.
That's understandable at the start.
Yeah,
he kind of found his range after a while. He got two or three.
He did a little bit, but look at if Kildare are to continue progressing, you know, that element of their game needs to improve, because they missed an awful lot of chances, particularly in the first half. Now, I know they were well ahead at half time, but against a really top class team, they won't get the same freedom, so they need to be, they need to improve their accuracy. And look, Brophy is just the obvious one, because I suppose we know he's maybe a little bit rusty after coming back, and for him to be able to go out and perform the way he did for as long as he did in any event is so yeah. impressive. Like, you can just see the potential from him. But Daniel Flynn, to me, is, he caught the eye. He just plays with this sort of arrogance. You know, he's like a, I suppose, an adult playing with, you know, kids at a party or something like that. Do you know what I mean? There's a first communion and they're all out kicking ball in the backyard, and one of the parents comes in and he's not drunk and he's just grand. He's able to just hold on to possession forever, however long he wants to. That's just what he could do. He played with complete arrogance. At times now it went against him because he was maybe a little bit too casual in possession, but he's such an athlete. He's frightening, actually, how athletic he is, how powerful he is. Like, we saw against Leash, he buried, was it boot coming out with his shoulder, picked up and kicked a point off the outside of his left boot, which is his weaker foot. He was kicking points off left and right the other night. Look, he's a serious, serious talent. And look, we were all well aware of him a few years ago when he was coming through, how good he was, but he's taken his game probably onto another level.
He came through very young, you see, and you expect these lads are highly rated, and then there's too much expected of them. In like, the only fellas I saw coming out of minor was Kieran Kilkenny and Jack McCaffrey to immediately make it. Like, it's not that, it's not an easy thing to do. You need a year or two before you become that main man, and Flynn is 100% the main man now. One or two things you're saying he did, like, he went off the outside of his right foot when the inside was the shot to take, and he wasn't care about getting blocked down. He just didn't give him monkeys. Yeah. He just went off the outside of his boot, and I was like, why did he do that? Because he went off the inside on the one before and he scored. But like, it's like he just plays off the cuff. He just does what he thinks he wants to do. Yeah. And he's completely comfortable in any position from midfield up, and he's like very comfortable even a full forward for a lad that's an athlete. He's just a top notch player. Like,
yeah,
he's,
well, I mean, you saw him doing some I love seeing these sorts of things, so I'm not going to knock him for any of it. I think it's brilliant. Like, I mean, but there was a ball played to him at one stage, and it just came to him. He just flicked it over a Meade player's head, and you know, then he was nearly. It was always so. He ended up getting turned over because he was so casual about picking up the ball. And he thought he was going to run through about 8 Meade lads, you know. But this is the sort of way he just is. He's just playing like that off the cuff. And very interesting in his interview after the game, he was talking about how, you know, football is just really enjoyable. And in fairness to Keane, we spoke kind of before, but after the league final, he said they were nervous. And, you know, that's a brilliant thing that Liam Kearns was able to do for Tipperary, was have the players just playing with this total freedom and confidence in their ability, no matter the stage. And if Kildare can get that into themselves, you know, maybe they've learned from that league final and kind of the non-performance in Croke Park, where they maybe were nervous, but geez, they didn't show any sign of nerves the other day against Meade, and they played with that sort of abandon and control too. You know, they played with control in their game plan, but a sort of a freedom of expression in their play, you know, that they were trying things.
Do you know their actual game plan is very like Dublin's? It's all, like, I'm not going to say they've plagiarised Dublin's, but it's very, very similar, right? You're trying to leave four forwards up there. You have two working half forwards. You have centre-back Owen Doyle, and he's dropping off like Keane O'Sullivan, and you can see that a mile away. Now, don't think they're as fluid as Dublin, because Killian O'Sullivan ran amok at centre-forward, only the poor chap has no end product. And if he had, he got a mountain of ball in the first half because Doyle's dropping off him. And I don't think they have the transition of Doyle dropping off and someone else picking him up down. I presume it's Fergal Conway's job to drop back in on Killian O'Sullivan. It wasn't at the game to know exactly who was detailed, but Killian O'Sullivan got a mountain of ball and wasn't being marked. And I think that's because Doyle was clearly dropping off as a sweeper, and they're trying to play that similar game plan to Dublin.
Yeah, and it's like the term Keane used was off the cuff. Like, that's nearly one criticism I would have of Kildare. As much as McNally and Flynn were outstanding, it just seemed like there was no real pattern to what they were doing. It wasn't set up to have the same sort of attack to get these boys in the scoring position and put it over. It was all almost just like Feely and Mullick will win something and then we'll sort of go from there. They had everything down up until that point. It just didn't seem very repetitive what they were doing.
Well, they had a two-man full forward line, and the game plan was clearly to hit the two lads early as possible. They had Flynn and my favourite player, centre forward Niall Kelly, on the half forward line. Kelly didn't have one of his better games, but their job is to break either side and give it in. Their game plan is a traditional game plan to get it into full forward line and work off them. I think that, and it's similar to Dublin in that kind of way, you know, their game plan in defence is to drop Dial off and cover the full back line, and you know what I mean, Conway and Slattery kind of do an awful lot of work back there, and they'll try and plug up. And I thought they did plug up the Meath full forward line. There was always a sweeper covering their full forward line, and in attack I thought their game plan was really good in hitting the two lads with early balls. So like, I mean, it's obviously a different game plan to the likes of Tyrone, but it's a good effective game plan all the same.
Just on that, I don't believe that you can have a prescribed way of playing on the attack, because the whole point of, you know, attack and play is to try and evade the opposition's defence. So I don't think it can be too predictable. So you have to have that level of freedom and allowing
your
forward.
Formation has to be there.
Like what I think is you have to have the basic principles. So the basic principles are, okay, we always want to have two men in our full forward line, or at least one, and we want to have four players up in the opposition half, so that they, you know these are the basic principles, and we want to move the ball as quickly as possible. But I think you can be very, very prescriptive in your own defence in terms of the zones that you want people to pick up. But when it gets to attacking play, I think forwards by their very nature, defenders don't mind being told exactly what to do, and this is your job and do it. Forwards don't really respond in the same way. Forwards need to be kind of, you know, they're like delicate flowers, you know. They need a bit of water and a bit of love and sing to them. But they need that freedom to express themselves so that they can try things and try the difficult shot and the difficult pass and the killer pass and not be worried about conceding possession. You know, you have to be able to have that confidence to just go for things. Whereas in the defence, by your very nature, you're playing a little bit more conservative because you have a job to do. So I thought Kildare worked the ball pretty well at times when they were on the attack. Now, Meade got bodies back there to try and block up the space. So Kildare on occasion had to work the ball. I know what you're saying, there was no real sort of definitive thing, but they always had an outlet in their full forward line who stayed in there and stayed patient, whereas Meade actually didn't. When Meade's attack was slowed up, all their full forward line ended up out on the 45, and the man on the ball had no option. He had no option staying in deep, nobody in there to stretch the Kildare defence and create that danger inside. That was one big thing, that, you know, an obvious difference between a sort of a team playing more intelligently than the other. I suppose the other thing as well, you mentioned Killian O'Sullivan, he made some brilliant runs forward, but I always got the impression that the Kildare defence were just moving him to a zone where they could swarm him and take the ball off him. You know, there was no real... He made one unbelievable run.
Well, he seems to go too far with it all the time. If he was willing to clip a point or two over on the run, he had space to do that. You know, he just kept... He'll go as far as he... Like, it's almost like he's trying to run the ball into the net. You're just killing... Just knock that over.
I thought he was part of the problem with Meade.
Yeah, like, he was.
There was definitely a lack of vision in the way Meade attacked. I mean, it was very straight line stuff. They crowded themselves out. There was no width to the attack. Mm. There was no recycling of possession when they got there to any great effect. It was pretty much, okay, we're going to run in a straight line here, and if this doesn't work, we're going to run in a straight line here. You know, so it was very, very disappointing from a Meade perspective, because having come up against so many defensive teams throughout the league and being able to still put up decent scores, it was very strange. Now, look, possibly the team that isn't fully developed yet in Championship Fair, the intensity of it, and when Kildare got a lead on them, maybe a bit of panic set in, they tried to force things when things weren't going their way. A more mature team tends to be able to weather the storm and just, you know, work their way back into the game. But look, Kildare were obviously very well set up, dropped off, and left a different Meade half forward was kind of free on most occasions to drop deep and get easy possession. Eamon Wallace did it on occasion in the first half, Killian O'Sullivan, but they didn't really make it tell. They weren't able to orchestrate the attacks against Kildare to make any sort of penetrative, you know, runs or do anything that was creating any real danger in the Kildare defence.
Yeah, and like the full forward line, when they did have one, like, it looked like Lenehan was on it, but the delivery in was very poor. Either it was absolutely lamped down on top of them just to go chase with three men hanging off them, or it was just these little skittery balls bouncing in front of them. And again, go back to O'Sullivan, I think he was the big sort of perpetrator of that, because he had so much ball, but when he was letting it in, it just wasn't, there was no appreciation on it for the forward to come out and get a handy pick up and put it over.
Yeah. And Doyle in fairness covered the full forward line well, and it was a two man full forward line, so it was very easy for him to cover, you know. And Meade didn't look like they played any sweeper. Imagine not playing a sweeper in front of Paddy Brophy and in front of McNally, who are lively full forwards. And Kildare's game plan, when you see Paddy Brophy in there, because that's what he's always been, is a ball winner, and he's in there, surely you need to cut out that initial ball from Paddy Brophy.
Because he was always giving them a platform, even if he wasn't getting shots off.
They'd recycle it and they get someone else up in support. And like, I mean, just because he wasn't setting the world alight at the start, he was still winning an initial ball and getting Kildare up the feet. You know what I mean?
He absolutely was, and he was showing hard for everything. Look, Meade don't play with a full-time sweeper. And look, when you play against teams that at times Kildare were able to break so quick, they always had that out ball in the full forward line, like that, to stretch the Meath defence and, you know, maybe force the Meath defence to have to go back inside their own 45. And then once that happened, they were able to recycle the ball. And it only takes then a quick little interchange of hand passes and you have a shot off from inside the 50. And at inter-county level, most players are going to get them.
Yeah, exactly. Right, lads, we've probably gone a bit overtime there. But we'll be back in a second with performance of the weekend.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around you. But you're looking at me. You're looking
well,
at me.
Out of a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Yeah, performance of the weekend, lads. First of all, we'll have to say Matty Donnelly, who's on the show, an outstanding performance, and really has his midfield role locked down now, as in he's combining breaking forward with defending, and he's picking his moments to go. And like, I mean, there's one thing we had to mention, or we didn't mention in the analysis, was his first point, and it was like, who's in front of me? Oh, McHugh, I'm going past him. Yeah. You know what I mean? He knew when to go and when not to, and he was kind of playing the right hand side of the field the whole game, and he knew when to break forward and he knew when to hold back. And he played more defensively. He did break forward a couple of times, but he wasn't breaking forward and losing energy breaking forward. He was breaking forward with the intention of having some you know what I mean? He wasn't wasting energy making, you know, stupid runs, but his holding around that middle third and then going when he chose himself, I thought was really impressive.
Yeah, it sort of summed up the difference between both sides, men against boys. I mean, like that first point, it was almost just brushing past this guy, like it was just a pest on his shoulders, just rubbing it off. But got a good one with his left as well. But I thought it was men against boys on the sideline too, where the way Tyrone were set up to get boys like Donnelly free completely caught Rory Gallagher by surprise. I think even at the start of the game, you had Niamh Magee marking Mark Bradley, and like you could see Rory Gallagher shuffling to try and sort this out, and it was chaos for like the first 4 or 5 minutes to try and get Paddy McGrath back. And then Niamh Magee didn't know where he was going because he didn't know where Sean Cavan was playing. But yeah, to sum up, Matty Donnelly gets my vote.
Yeah, okay, right, well, okay, Matty Donnelly, we'll give Matty Donnelly to you. Who do you think, Keane?
Well, I suppose the main game I was focusing on was the Kildare Meath game, and the Kildare inside forward line were very good. Colin McNally scored 1-3 from play, Daniel Flynn 1-4 from play, and Brophy kicked 2 points. So what's that, 2-9 from
2-9
the
first
forward
altogether. Well, Flynn now played out the field a lot. The great thing about Flynn is,
well,
that
he was in and out, you know what I mean?
In and out. Well,
yeah,
I think he went in more when Brophy went off.
Correct.
Do you know what I mean? Outside, when Brophy was on the field, it was Brophy and McNally inside, and Flynn was roving around the half forward line and causing all sorts of
Kelly
problems.
As well, Lincoln
Kelly.
Yeah. Look at they've series.
Good, aren't they?
Yeah, they're good. Yeah, yeah, no, they are really good. And in fairness, hopefully Ben McCormick as well can get back into the mix too.
Because I don't know where he gets in though.
I was very impressed with him in the league. I think he's a very good player. So,
and sure, Paul Cribben didn't even start.
Yeah,
like, he'd be on instead
of Flynn as well. Came on as a sub. Like, I mean, Kildare do have talent at the minute. But look, Daniel Flynn was the one that caught the eye most in that game. Just with everything, I mean, McNally was excellent and, you know, had a huge impact at the start of the game when it was a real contest. He got 1-3 in the first half, but 1-2 in probably the opening 20 minutes. But Flynn is just a Rolls Royce, and you know, he was in full flight at the weekend.
Yeah, all action and a little bit of arrogance that you need as well, because no matter what you say, you need players that are a little bit arrogant.
Like,
and they brush
do,
off on everyone else, and they become your talisman. And without talisman, you've got no team either. Teams need all these kind of different dynamics, and Flynn can be that.
Daniel Zlatan Flynn.
Daniel Flynn is a player that other teams will hate, and we know we need them as well, and your own team will love, and he is that little bit cocky. Patrick Hamsey, lad. Mark Michael Murphy scored 2 from play, and I don't know about you, but I've played corner forward, and we're going to talk about this in the hurling show. Austin Gleeson was playing corner forward, and he was told to come out into a roving role, but your Spillane followed him out. Now, my God, I've been given that role before, and I ended up having to say to managers after a while, stop playing me in this role. I am not a free man out in midfield if my man follows me. There is nothing more demoralising than to be man marked in the middle third, because it's just horrible. You're meant to be out there psychologically, you're meant to be out there as, okay, you're getting on a few handy balls and making things happen, but there's some fella never leaving your side. And like, I mean, you can be man marked in the half forward line, to an extent, but your man will always try to get into the play. Like, a halfback will always try to get into the play. If you're out there with a cornerback, that if there's an off-the-shoulder run, he won't leave you to go on it. Do you know that kind of... Now, Hampsey did a couple of times with Murphy. But in general, if a cornerback is marking you as a roving midfield role, you're a dead man walking. You're gone. It never really turns out that well, because it just demoralises you. But he actually did leave Murphy a couple of times to really demoralise Murphy. So he was on him when Donegal were attacking, and then when they weren't, he would have joined the attack and kicks. The first score he got was beyond belief. Like, I mean, that's top
first score in his helmet.
But even the trajectory of it, like, it was just a bullet. There wasn't even a huge swing on it. It was just a lovely send it left and let it drop back in. Yes. You know what I mean? It was a beautiful thing for a cornerback to do.
Murphy wasn't marking him, though. That's probably the most frustrating thing for
Murphy. Midfielders don't mark. This is why. Like, I mean, Hampsey was happy to mark him, and then, you know what I mean? But Murphy didn't want to mark him, because midfielders just don't mark each other.
Yeah. And that's probably, again, where I feel like Murphy was let down a little bit yesterday, and that they didn't even try something different. They didn't detail anyone else to pick up Hampsey when he was free, when Tyrone had the ball. But Murphy's played around the middle of the field the whole game, didn't even put him to half forward, didn't even put him inside, just stayed around there with a man hanging off him, and they really needed him to get into it, and he didn't. And in a game like that, where it was just this young, inexperienced side basically shitting themselves in the white heat, the Clunas, they needed more from Murphy. They needed him inside, even just to drill a couple of balls in to see what would happen.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. And I think maybe that's a lesson for any team to learn, that put someone in Michael Murphy and tell him to go forward at every single opportunity. And Michael is pretty much not going to bother following him, and that's just the reality of it.
Yeah, but I think, in fairness, Tyrone are probably an example in their own right, given the way they play and the amount of bodies they flood into the middle zone of the field. But it was a very interesting approach to... I suppose they had to do it, maybe, Tyrone, because they want to free up Colm Kavanagh. So, I mean, for them, it's a case of, right, Donegal, whoever is the free cornerback, you push in and cover Murphy, or cover the opposition midfielder.
And Colm Kavanagh.
You would have
back.
To think that, you look at with the preparation that goes into it, they would have specifically detailed Hampsey for Murphy and lined them up in such a way. But the play is so fluid for Tyrone. I'm sure on various occasions throughout the game, it was just somebody needed to pick that space, as Conan had done the analysis earlier.
Yeah, no, exactly. Colm Kavanagh deserves a shout out as well, lads. He's on the go a long time. You get tired talking about how great he is. I didn't think he was that good of a fetcher. I know he can fetch, but I didn't think he could dominate Michael Murphy the way he did. So he definitely deserves a shout out. If you might be complaining why all our performances of the weekends are from Kildare Meath and Tyrone Donegal, it's because they were the games on television. We're not going to bullshit with players that we haven't really seen playing, unless we've seen some brilliant highlights or something absolutely magical. But I always feel sorry for the lads on the Sunday game when there's a load of qualifiers on and they're being made give sound bites on, like, they'll give a maybe four qualifier highlights in a row, and then it's back to some poor unfortunate pundit that has to kind of summarise where all these teams are with only seeing like a minute and a half package. Like, I mean, I just go, my heart goes out to them.
I can categorically state that Derry are back.
Chiefs are moving very well now, I have to say, from that one score I saw, really.
You're looking for a defender who scored 2 points and then you can talk about him for 30 seconds.
Okay, winner of performance of the weekend is Daniel Flynn. We spent most time talking about him. Outstanding stuff. And there will be performance of the weekend, Muggs, I promise you. None of you have got one yet. Jesus. But we really have to get our arses moving on these performance of the weekend, Muggs. And listen, I'm going to painstakingly go back over every single weekend and you'll all get a mug. So Daniel Flynn is the latest mug recipient. So we'll be back on Thursday with another preview show. See you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colm Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.